580, Section 2, The Georgia Home Front During World War II. As you read, look for the importance of the military to Georgia, the importance of the defense industry to Georgia, the effects of World War II on life in Georgia, the effects of the Holocaust, terms, rationing, black market, blackout, Holocaust. After Pearl Harbor, industry in the United States became focused on war production. Consumer goods gave way to military equipment. The productivity of the country during the war was outstanding. By the end of the war, American factories had turned out several hundred thousand planes, thousands of tanks, and millions of bullets. In the desert of New Mexico, scientists worked secretly to unlock the mystery of the atom's nuclear power and to make the first workable nuclear bomb. World War II brought Georgia's economy out of the Depression. As in World War I, the United States government established many military installations in the South. Georgia was host to over a dozen. During the war, defense industries also built factories in the state, including the important Bell Aircraft Plant in Marietta. Both the military and defense manufacturers hired civilians, including many who had been unable to find work before. The war hastened the movement from farm to town or city and changed the state's landscape. Georgians, like other Americans, were shocked by the bombing of Pearl Harbor and ready to do their parts and make the sacrifices necessary to fight and win. The Depression had been a training ground for making do, reusing, and recycling. Those skills came in handy during the four long years of war. The military in Georgia. The South had several major advantages for the establishment of military bases. Throughout the South were large tracts of open land that required moving far fewer people than in some of the more densely populated areas of the country. The land was also cheaper in the southern states. Because wages were lower in the South, the cost of employees, both as construction workers and as the civilian workers on the bases, was less. The South also had a mild climate that allowed for training year-round. Georgia had powerful political figures in Congress, including Congressman Vinson and Senators Walter F. George and Richard Russell, who had supported Roosevelt's military preparedness. Their influence helped bring Georgia a number of military installations. Every major Georgia town had a military base of some kind for training soldiers, caring for the wounded, or housing prisoners of war. The military already had several homes in the state. One of the largest was Fort McPherson in Atlanta, which had been a permanent base for the U.S. Army since 1885. It had seen service in both the Spanish-American War and World War I. As U.S. preparedness increased in 1940, Fort McPherson grew with the construction of a hospital, new barracks, a supply depot, and many other buildings. During the war, it was a major center for vehicles for the 4th Command Division, as well as a research center to study the tropical diseases that sickened soldiers in the jungles. As the war wound down, McPherson became a separation center for soldiers returning to their homes and civilian lives. The United States Infantry Training School had moved to Fort Benning near Columbus in World War I. Some of those who trained there became the military leaders of World War II, including Generals Omar Bradley, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and George Marshall. In the middle of the 1930s, the United States had decided to build several new Army air depots. Congressman Vinson, who represented the central area of the state, worked with leaders in Macon to have one located in that area. Warner Robins Army Air Depot was located outside Macon near the Southern Railroad Depot at Wellston, renamed Warner Robins. It became the workplace for over 20,000 people who received training and did repairs on aircraft for the Army Air Corps, keeping B-17s, B-29s, B-24s, and other planes repaired was a major contribution to the war effort. Augusta also became a training ground. A large area south of the community became Camp Gordon. The site had been chosen in the spring of 1941 when the United States was strengthening its military. During the war, it was home to the 4th and 26th Infantry Divisions and the 10th Armored Division, all of whom fought in Europe. As the war progressed, Camp Gordon and the arsenal in Augusta held prisoners of war from both Germany and Italy. During the war, the arsenal in Augusta made lenses for weapon sights and periscopes for submarines, as well as ordnance, military supplies. In 1940, the Army Air Corps began training 2,000 men at Augusta's Daniel Field. Another airfield was constructed nearer Camp Gordon to serve as the Georgia Aerotech Training Center for pilots. In 1942, the Army took over a major resort hotel called the Forrest Ricker to serve as a hospital for wounded soldiers. Savannah and the area around it also benefited from the military buildup that began in 1940. An effort led by Congressman Hugh Peterson of Ailey resulted in Camp Stewart, an anti-aircraft training installation located near the small town of Hinesville. CCC workers built the buildings of the huge facility, which covered portions of five counties. Over 55,000 workers made the camp larger than most Georgia towns. Like Camp Gordon in Augusta, Camp Stewart housed POWs. In both towns, local farmers used the German and Italian POWs during harvest season. The Army also took over the new Savannah Municipal Airport, Hunter Airfield, for the duration of the war. The Rickenbacker Field in Marietta was also turned over to the Army Air Corps. One of the more unusual military groups in Georgia during the war was the U.S. Navy Training Center in Milledgeville for the WAVES, or Women Accepted for Voluntary Emergency Service. Due to the efforts of Congressman Vinson, the Navy chose Georgia State College for Women as the site for one of the several training facilities for WAVES in the country, and the only one in the South. From January 1943 to May 1945, over 15,000 women volunteers from all over the United States trained there for 3 months before receiving their naval assignments. While the young college women walked to class, the Navy WAVES marched in formation to their training sessions. All of the military facilities made a positive impact on Georgia's economy, but it was not without sacrifice. The new bases resulted in Georgia families being forced to sell farms and homes to the government. Sometimes the land had been in the family for generations. Giving up their property was heartbreaking for many, but most considered it their patriotic duty and a contribution to the war effort. Since most did not make enough money on the sales to buy farm acreage, many moved to towns and cities, establishing their families in urban areas. The defense industry in Georgia. The same factors that made the South attractive to the military, climate, lower wages, and open land, also brought companies who manufactured military equipment. Atlanta's pre-war efforts to make itself a distribution center in the South paid off. One of the largest of the defense plants was the Bell Aircraft Company, also known as Bell Bomber. The company had been founded in 1935 by Lawrence Bell in New York. After Pearl Harbor, the United States needed more planes for the war effort. General Lucius Clay, whom Roosevelt had chosen to head up a program to construct more airports, worked with the Marietta mayor and a Cobb County commissioner to get a facility in his hometown. Bell Aircraft, which opened in 1943, had a major impact on the permanent growth of this area. Of the thousands who worked there, 37% were female, Georgia's own versions of the famous Rosie the Riveter. The Rosie the Riveter symbol was used in government ads to convince women that working was not only acceptable, but patriotic. These women and their male co-workers turned out over 600 B-29s, also known as super fortresses, because of their size and bomb-carrying capacity. The Marietta plant was one of four in the United States building the large, long-range bombers. These planes flew mainly in the Pacific during the war. The Enola Gay, which dropped the first atomic bomb, was a B-29. The shipbuilding industry was important along Georgia's coast. In 1942, the United States began shipping troops and war supplies across the Atlantic Ocean. Trying to stop these efforts, German U-boats roamed the ocean in groups known as wolf packs. They were having success in sinking American ships and the tons of supplies. The country needed to expand its cargo-going capabilities. The United States Maritime Commission oversaw that effort, hiring companies to build ships and, in some cases, build shipyards. Both Southeastern Shipbuilding on the Savannah River and J.A. Jones Shipyard in Brunswick turned out Liberty ships. These were cargo vessels over 440 feet long and 56 feet wide that carried rifles and ammunition, tanks, jeeps, and airplanes. They were simple ships, which could be built quickly. Parts were pre-built in factories throughout the country, and the ship itself was assembled in the shipyard's slipways, a sloping surface used to build or repair boats before returning them to the water. President Roosevelt nicknamed the ships the Ugly Ducklings. In 1945, both of the Georgia yards shifted to building knot ships, designed for short coastal transportation. The Savannah Shipyard Incorporated was taken over by the United States Maritime Commission in 1942. The USMC contracted with Southeastern Shipbuilding Corporation to oversee the construction of the cargo ships. The size of the yard was doubled to allow six ships to be built at a time. The first ship was launched at the end of 1942, named the USS James Oglethorpe. In honor of Georgia's founder, this ship did not survive the war. It was hit by a German U-boat's torpedo. The Savannah yards turned out 88 Liberty ships during the war, each costing almost $2 million. Many were named for famous Georgians, including the three signers of the Declaration of Independence, Colonial Minister George Whitefield, Girl Scouts founder Juliet Gordon Lowe, and educator Martha Berry. In Brunswick, a new six-slipway yard was constructed by Brunswick Marine. In January 1943, the USMC gave the contract to the J.A. Jones Construction Company, a North Carolina construction engineering firm. The Brunswick Shipyard also built Liberty ships, 85 in all. The company received national attention on Christmas Day, 1944, when the workers gave up their holiday and worked for free to turn out ships needed for the war. In 1945, the Brunswick Shipyard also switched to building the knot ships. Just as Bell Aircraft influenced the economic recovery in its area, these shipbuilding operations helped the economy of the coastal area. Both men and women worked in the yards, as many as 15,000 at any one time in Savannah, and up to 17,000 in Brunswick. Because the ships were relatively simple in construction, workers without shipbuilding experience could be hired. Most workers were from Georgia or nearby areas of the South. By the war's end, over 45,000 people had worked for each of the companies. In Savannah, the company built the Pine Gardens neighborhood to house some of its workers. The city of Savannah also constructed apartments for the shipyard workers. During the war, Georgia women worked in the defense industry. Women from other areas came to the state as members of the WASP, Women's Air Force Service Pilots, of the Army Air Corps, and the WAVES of the Navy. WASPs in Georgia towed the targets used in anti-aircraft artillery practice, although WASPs in many areas ferried aircraft to their bases trained male pilots, and transported troops. The fact that men were needed for combat gave women these opportunities. The war had several positive effects in the state. It put Georgians to work. Wages were up in all jobs, providing more income than many had had in almost two decades. These Georgians also learned new skills that they could use after the war. They proved themselves to be good workers, capable of learning new jobs. The war also brought Georgians into contact with each other and with Americans who came to the state from other parts of the country to train and work. Georgia cities had USO, United Services Organization, facilities where Georgians entertained and interacted with soldiers. For many, it was the first time they had met someone from the North or the West. While these developments began to break down some of the barriers between the state and other areas of the country, it also exposed some of the less modern aspects of the state to other Americans. Life in Georgia during the war. As in other parts of the country, Georgians lived with the sacrifices that the war made necessary. The needs of the troops and the war effort became more important than the wants of American consumers. Rationing, limiting the purchase of certain items, was instituted. Beginning in 1942, new automobiles were no longer produced. The need for rubber for military vehicles and other equipment led to the rationing of rubber. Replacing a tire required a special application that showed a need. Gasoline rationing conserved fuel for the war. The average American had a regular A ration, which allowed 4 gallons a week. Industrial workers and others considered essential to the war effort got a B ration of 8 gallons a week. Doctors, ministers, and a few others got more. Americans had to walk more, carpool, use public transportation, and carefully plan the miles they drove. Driving for pleasure became illegal, as did driving fast. The victory speed was no more than 35 miles an hour on all the nation's roads and highways. The death rate from automobile accidents dropped. Most food was rationed by points. Each person had a certain number of points a month to use in any combination for canned foods, meats, cheese, and other items. For example, a regular number 2 size can of tomatoes was 6 points. Sugar was rationed separately, not by points, but by fixed amounts for each person. As the war went on, sugar became more and more scarce, and the ration was lowered. Companies like Coca-Cola continued to have access to sugar because their products were considered a boost for the morale of soldiers. To add food to their rationed items, citizens planted victory gardens and grew a large percentage of their own vegetables. As the war progressed, other items appeared on the ration list. By 1944, Americans got 2 pairs of shoes a year. More women began to wear slacks when it became difficult to get stockings to cover their legs. Nylon was needed for parachutes, not hosiery. Most Americans honored rationing, at least most of the time. Helping the war effort was part of a citizen's patriotic duty. However, a black market in rationed goods did emerge, as illegal sales of rationed goods could make a dishonest person considerable money. To keep the United States supplied with metals, rubber, and other scarce materials, the government encouraged Americans to turn in any scrap they had. Youth organizations, such as the Boy Scouts, even got involved in metal drives. Some cities took up old streetcar rails for reuse by the government. Rubber items such as old tires, rain boots, swim caps, and water hoses were turned in to be made into war materials. Even fats and cooking oils were recycled. Another patriotic action was to contribute to the war effort by buying the war bonds sold by the U.S. government. By buying a bond, a citizen was lending the government money. Movie stars came to Georgia and other states, putting on shows to encourage people to buy bonds. Americans were urged to spend less on themselves in order to lend more to your country. Many workers had money deducted from their paychecks to buy bonds. In areas considered possible targets of attack, air raid drills were held so people could practice what to do if there was a real bombing raid. In Georgia, the coastal cities watched the shores for enemy submarines. Those living in coastal Georgia saw parts of ships washing ashore from the German submarine attacks against shipping in the Atlantic Ocean. Blackouts were common along the coast. Lights were turned off or windows and doors covered to make it difficult for a plane flying over to find towns, cities, and other landmarks at night. Georgians, like Americans all over the country, found their lives profoundly changed during the war years. Most contributed to the war effort by buying bonds, living on less, doing without rationed or unavailable goods, and working hard. By the end of the war, the economy had not only recovered, but gone in some new directions. Both white and black Georgians had moved from farm to city. Some African-American Georgians had also moved to the North or the West for jobs in the booming factories of those areas, continuing the great migration that had begun with World War I. The Holocaust. For four long years, Georgians and other Americans, along with their allies from other countries, fought battles on land and sea. In Europe, a major assault on the beaches of Normandy in northern France began on D-Day, June 6, 1944. That led to the liberation of France from the Germans and made it possible for the Soviets to begin to push the Germans from their country. The United States and Great Britain pushed toward Germany from the west, while the Soviets pushed toward Germany from the east. As Soviet soldiers began to fight their way through Eastern Europe and Germany, they were horrified by what they found: Nazi concentration camps where over 6 million Jews, as well as millions of others considered undesirable, had been killed. Hitler's regime had always targeted Jews who had been identified, rounded up, and initially forced to work, along with thousands of others, as slave labor in work camps. The disabled, Roma gypsies, some Poles, homosexuals, and others were among those murdered to eliminate inferior groups. So were people who tried to defy the Nazi government. But the final solution to what Hitler called the Jewish problem had been to exterminate or kill them all. At places such as Dachau, Auschwitz, Treblinka, and Buchenwald, the Allied soldiers found piles of bodies as well as starving survivors. At some camps, huge ovens and gas chambers stood as testimony to the horror of the genocide. By 1942, rumors and information about death camps had gotten to the Allies. The United States was taking in very few refugees during the war and did not change that policy until 1944. Roosevelt said that winning the war would liberate the camps. Americans, however, were shocked by the pictures that began to come in. Known as the Holocaust, this killing of two-thirds of Europe's Jews showed the dehumanizing effect of philosophies of racial and ethnic superiority. Georgia had a Jewish community that dated to its founding in 1733. Although Jews lived in towns and cities throughout the state, Atlanta was a center of Jewish culture, not only for Georgia, but the entire Southeast. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, Jews there had started organizations to provide social services to Jews who needed aid, especially new immigrants. In the 1930s and 1940s, aid efforts turned to relief for Jews overseas. Georgia Jews also focused on fighting anti-Semitism at home. After World War II, some refugees from the Holocaust came to the United States, some settling in Atlanta. Many American Jews, including Georgia Jews, came to support the idea of a Jewish homeland in the Middle East. The founding of Israel in 1948 was the realization of that idea. In 1996, the William Bremen Jewish Heritage Museum opened its doors with an exhibit on Jewish history and heritage. The two permanent exhibits focus on Jews of Atlanta and on the Holocaust. An Atlanta Jewish architect and survivor of the Holocaust designed the second exhibit. In the summers, the Bremen offers workshops on the teaching of the Holocaust. The focus of the exhibit and other programs on the Holocaust is to teach tolerance and respect. The Bremen is the largest museum of its type in the South. The end of World War II. By April 1945, Franklin D. Roosevelt's health was suffering, no doubt made worse by the heavy burdens of conducting the war. He had come for rest to his little White House at Warm Springs when he had a stroke and died. Vice President Harry S. Truman became president. He had to make the final decisions of the war. After Germany's surrender in May 1945, the United States focused on ending the war in the Pacific. Japan had refused to surrender in spite of defeats in the islands of the Pacific Ocean and heavy bombing of its homeland. In July, a secret project that had been going on for the entire war successfully met its goal, the building of an atomic bomb. After testing one in the deserts of New Mexico, President Truman decided to use the new weapon to end the war against Japan. One bomb was dropped on Hiroshima on August 6th, and one on Nagasaki on August 9th. They unleashed a power never before seen, killing tens of thousands and bringing about Japan's surrender. By September 1945, over 320,000 Georgia men and women had fought and over 6,750 had died in World War II. As the thousands of Georgians returned at the end of the war, they came home to a different state. Their hometowns had grown, the economy had changed, and society was different. So were they. Military training, the sights and sounds of war, the interaction with other people and different ideas had affected them. The making of modern Georgia was underway. Reviewing the section, 1. Define black market, blackout, Holocaust. 2. Why was Bell Aircraft so important to Georgia? 3. What was the purpose of rationing, and how did it affect Georgians? Page 591, Discovering Georgia's Past, World War II POWs in Georgia. During World War II, enemy soldiers captured by American troops were handled as prisoners of war, POWs, by the U.S. Army. To relieve troops overseas from having to guard and care for prisoners, almost all of the German and Italian POWs were sent to the United States. By the time Germany surrendered, there were over 400,000 POWs in the states. The United States followed the Geneva Convention, which called for captured soldiers to be treated humanely. POW base camps usually had from 2,000 to 4,000 prisoners. In addition to barracks for housing, these camps had medical facilities, workshops, a canteen, store, and areas for exercise and recreation. The facilities were enclosed in barbed wire fencing with guard towers. Prisoners worked at their camps in food preparation, construction, maintenance, and other tasks. In 1943, Georgia had 3 base camps, but that number expanded in the next year to 14. There were also smaller temporary camps. Major POW camps included Fort Benning in Columbus, Camp Gordon in Augusta, Camp Stewart outside Savannah, and Camp Wheeler in Macon. German prisoners were separate from captured Italians. With American workers away at war, the prisoners provided much-needed labor in Georgia. Prisoner groups were sent to work on farms during harvesting. They also worked in sawmills and other types of factories. In Augusta, hundreds of prisoners from Camp Gordon worked at the Augusta Arsenal. Prisoner groups from Georgia were also sent to the Carolinas and Florida to fill temporary labor needs. One problem in the prison camps was the true Nazi believers who did not want to cooperate with the Americans. They were a small minority of German prisoners, but they tried to intimidate others into not working. Most POWs, however, worked and appreciated the fair treatment they received. After the war ended, prisoners were returned to their countries. Some later applied to return and settle in Georgia.